Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, the show about data networking. And today we have a community show. That's a show where no sponsors are around and we all get together huddled deep under our desk with just one little light on and talk to each other about networking. Just us, the engineering people are here. You don't have to look over your shoulder or worry about anything. All the managers are gone. It's just us. Okay. Now, I absolutely lied, because what I did was, all the engineers that are on the call today that are our guests have turned to the dark side. They work for vendors now. And the point of this show is to find out why they went from engineering in their own companies and organizations and then moved over to work for a vendor. And why did they do that? And what's that like now that they've gone over to the vendor side of things? I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and my blog is ethancbanks.com. And of course, this is the Packet Pushers Podcast at packetpushers.net. And my co-host Greg Farrow is with me today, all the way from the United Kingdom. And how are things, sir?
I'm not dead. So yeah, it's you know, in the rundown to interop, and I've been looking at my presentation going, oh my God, that's not good enough.
I'm in the same problem this week. I don't know if you have this issue, but my issue is too much content. So I'm trying to make sure I have enough slides that there's a quality presentation, but not so much I'm racing through it, which has been my problem in the past.
Yeah. No, I have that problem as well. But I keep looking at my – I've got a different problem. You know, I've got a thing about fonts, right?
Yes, you do, very much.
I can't decide which font. It's like I watch my teenage daughters when they get ready and they go, should I wear the shirt or the skirt or the dress? Or should I have my hair long or up? Or it's me, should I have the big font or the thin font? You know, should I go with the humanist font or should I go with the slab serif? I'm not sure. So many decisions.
Keep it simple. And at the end of the day, all they're going to remember is your sunny, smiling face articulating the wonders of the network and the glory thereof to them in front. They'll be so awestruck with you, your fonts won't even be a thing.
Indeed. Now, we should also take this opportunity to mention that we have a sponsor for today's show. NetRounds is sponsoring us today, and we thank them for sponsoring. We'll tell you a little bit more about them during the show, but they make probes that go into your network, and they can do monitoring and get some really sort of a cloud-based monitoring service for your network. So we'll talk more about that a little bit later on.
Well, let's introduce our guests then, and we got three folks that have joined us, two that ended up at Cisco and one that ended up at startup Plexi. And let's start with our good folks that landed at Cisco, starting off with Lauren Malhoit. Lauren, say hi and tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Hi, yeah, I'm Lauren Malhoit, and I've been writing blogs and podcasting and all that good stuff for the past few years, but I just accepted a job with the Cisco NCMABU, so ACI Nexus 9000, as a technology evangelist. I'm sure, much to Greg's chagrin, I've heard his thoughts on technology evangelism, but I do have to say, Greg, I think you should always go with Comic Sans, right?
Now, Lauren, as an evangelist, you were issued robes, right? There's like a priestess robe kind of thing you're going to wear?
Yeah, there's, you know, some ceremonies. There's some blindfolding done. Reminds me of my sorority days.
There you go. also with us is Mr.
Just
Paul
as much
Stewart.
Drinking.
And Paul, if you would, same thing. Introduce yourself and tell folks a little bit about your background.
So I'm Paul Stewart. I've been in technology for, I guess, full time since about 98 or so, and writing blogs for the last three or four years over at PacketU. Spent a lot of time on the Cisco Learning Network helping other people sort of get started in the industry, learn some of the basics in networking. Took a job with Cisco about 6 weeks ago, so all this is really new to me. My role's a little bit different than Lauren's. I'm SE or systems engineer on the what Cisco calls the SLED team, so state, local, and education. My primary focus is on higher ed at this point. So we go into colleges, you know, make sure people are buying the square pegs for the square holes, not the square pegs for the round holes. So
there you go.
Making sure that they're getting the right products.
Got it. And then last but not least, Mr. Ed Henry, who joined Plexi as a startup, and I was hoping there'd be some contrast there between a big company like Cisco and a smaller company like Plexi. Ed, if you would introduce yourself.
Thanks, Ethan. Thanks for having me today. My name is Ed Henry. I do work for Plexi now. I came out of the operator realm for about 8 years. That was my first stint into a vendor. And follow me on Twitter at NetworkNerd, nerd with a three. And there's, from what I'm noticing in the conversations I had, there is a bit of a contrast. So we can talk about that.
Now, Ed, you're actually on vacation right now. You said this is the first time you've opened your laptop in 10 days, and you had to find a Starbucks just to get some upstream bandwidth to record with us.
Yeah, I'm visiting some older family in Southern California right now. Have no internet whatsoever, so I raced up the street about 15, 20 minutes ago and found a local Starbucks, and I'm hoping the bandwidth holds out for the entire recording.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get this thing started with what did you guys do before? And I guess, Lauren, why don't we start with you? Could you describe your job before, kind of a little bit about your background before you took the gig at Cisco as the high priestess of ACI?
Sure. Yeah, so I was basically a systems engineer for a lot of years, working for SMB companies, kind of doing a little bit of everything. And then for the last couple of years, I've been with a Cisco VMware EMC partner as both an implementation engineer as well as a virtualization architect. So I've kind of been through all of the customer, partner, and now vendor possibilities.
Okay. What specific technologies did you really like, or what sort of things did you really like doing in that space? I mean, were you a really hands-on kind of a person, project manager kind of a person?
Yeah, hands-on as far as, you know, I literally went to customer sites and, you know, installed and supported and fixed and all of that good stuff. And before that, you know, did that, those kind of things for my own company. Virtualization was usually my focus. That was kind of a big deal. And then Cisco UCS kind of became part of that as well, just kind of being the server person, I guess, kind of matched up with virtualization. So that's where I really concentrated, and mostly in VMware, actually.
So this is actually really interesting because of where you've landed. So, okay, VMware and virtualization and all that was your specialty. I mean, how much were you into networking and that side of things?
I don't know how much certs count for anything, but, you know, I do have my CCNP, and, you know, you have to know at least a little bit about networking to do any of the virtualization stuff. But yeah, it wasn't a major concentration by any means. And before that, you know, working in SMBs, I was the network engineer as well, but, you know, there's not, it's not the same as working for an enterprise or something like that either. You kind of have to know what a VLAN is and how they all connect, but that's about it. So yeah,
sure,
it is,
yeah,
kind of interesting where I've landed. But again, it's also network virtualization and, you know, with ACI, it's hardware abstraction as well. So the virtual content does come into play. And as my boss said, you know, he hired me just to get me to quit writing VMware books. So.
Now you have a very social aspect to your career as well. You have had and still have a podcast that you do occasionally, and blogging and all of that, and active on Twitter. How did all of that play into what ended up being a role at Cisco?
And that's definitely a big part of it. You know, as I said, it's kind of an evangelist role. I made that up myself. It wasn't necessarily, you know, everything that I do. I'm involved in a lot of other things like training and stuff like that. And even, you know, getting into the labs, I still geek out. I just don't have to geek out at customer sites too much anymore. But yeah, just being able to talk and communicate with end users and being available and kind of having a name probably didn't hurt, and having written a book didn't hurt either. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, yeah, a big part of what they're hoping I can do for them is to spread the good news, right?
The profile helps when you get on the customer site and they look you up, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
They search for you up and then they say, oh, hang on, this person's done. This person seems. And they get this weird idea that you actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, when people look at me and they think I'm, you know, 20 years old as well, which I guess is a good thing for me, but I've actually been in the business for over a decade. And so it's.
Since you were nine?
Good
wow.
Looks you have, Lauren.
That's right.
Just like me.
Chubby
you
cheeks.
Know, I have that same problem too. You know? I'm often mistaken for, like, you know, George Clooney.
That's what I thought the first time I saw you, in fact.
So went downhill quick, didn't it?
You can count on me.
I mean, what is it that attracted to you to this role? Like, for me, jumping from at a customer site and then going to work for a vendor must have been a big, scary move. What is it, Lauren, that attracted you to the role? Was there something about it?
Yeah, I mean, it is still scary because I'm only 2 months in, so it's not like I have everything down pat yet or anything. But yeah, I was kind of, you know, it's great being an engineer and it's great being a partner, but I worked for a smaller partner, which is always kind of scary, especially now. A lot of the integrators are kind of either merging or getting acquired or just closing down, which was, you know, one thing I was concerned about. And then, you know, I was also just kind of sick of being in a different customer site every week and learning a new customer site. And it's a great experience, don't get me wrong. And it will be very helpful to me in my future. But I spent 2 years doing it. And I salute anyone that does it all the time for many years. But it's not something that I want to do for the rest of my life either.
Now, I know what you mean about that. I consulted once upon a time, and the constantly getting sent into a new situation where you don't know the people and you don't know the network, but you're expected to have all the answers can be really stressful, just because the expectations are so high that you're going to come in and be worth all the money that they're paying your company for you to be there. It's just, it really can. It got to me after a while, and it's like, I just want one network to think about. I'm tired of running around from place to place to place all the time.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing is, do I go broad or do I go in depth? And so I was kind of broad. I mean, granted, I was concentrating mostly on VMware and Cisco, but yeah, having to know different customers' environments, and a lot of them, you know, being smaller, didn't even really know anything about it themselves. So you had to know a little bit about, you know, Nagios or Zenos, and a little bit about this and that and whatever software they ended up with somehow, you know.
And being able to see through what they think they have and what they think is happening versus what reality is.
Always a very different thing than that pre-phone call, and then you show up and it's like, well, this doesn't look anything like what you described. So, yeah. You know, and then as far as what attracted me to Cisco, especially the ACI unit, definitely my boss, Joe Onosik. He and I have been friends for a little while, and he's a great guy to work for. And the technology itself is interesting, and I knew I could be passionate about it. So, and it's definitely something, a challenge as well. So those three things kind of all came together to really attract me to it.
And let's not put too fine a point on it. Was there a big wheelbarrow of cash involved?
not a huge wheelbarrow, no. I mean, there's certainly a pay raise, you know, what they call the vendor money, right? But no, I mean, that really isn't the full thing. I could have probably made, you know, I could have probably asked for a raise and been making close to, you know, what I do now at Cisco. So that wasn't it. And in fact, you know, I live in the Midwest, and a lot of people ask me when I'm moving to California and all of that. But, you know, I'm able to afford an awesome house and live quite nicely on a smaller income. So, you know, to me,
the trade off being you got to be on a plane more often.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, we work for Cisco, so our big thing's telepresence and WebEx, right?
There you
so
go. Yeah.
It's, there's a lot of ways to do it now.
Ed, let's shift over to you for a bit. Now, I know you worked in Connecticut on a big network that was there really as a service provider to, as I understood it, education and several other state-related properties that were out in that area, and had a pretty significant role. What tell us a little bit more about that and what you were doing.
Sure. It was a state-funded position. We had ONS 15454 GWDM nodes that I was a partial administrator for along with my team. So I think that played a little bit into my ability to take the role at Plexi. We do have a bit of a different approach when it comes to networks inside the data center using WDM technology. So I think that played a role. I was the senior network engineer there, kind of like the hybrid engineer architect role. I was doing 2 and 3 year planning, refresh cycle planning, your typical operational administrative stuff along with the architectural stuff. So yeah, that's what I did over there. Before that, I've had a multitude of jobs in the industry. I think I've worked for healthcare, education, government Department of Defense stuff. I've had quite a few roles so far in the industry, but the last one I did was that higher education role for the University of Connecticut.
Now, by itself, that sounds like a really challenging role, which you were doing. Lots of opportunity, probably a reasonable amount of funding most of the time if you had to get something done. I'm guessing here, but I'm suspecting there was money available to get it done. But then I know you got involved with the Open Daylight Project a bit and kind of looking at the future of networking. What was going on there with you?
So I've been good friends with Brent for a long time, Brent Salisbury, mm-hmm. and he actually got me my job at the University of Connecticut because he worked for the University of Kentucky before he worked for Red Hat, and he happened to know my former boss, so he called him up one day and gave me a call back and said, you should expect an interview, and I did. I got an interview. So so Brent's been dragging me in and out of that project for a while now. My lack of knowledge with Java has hurt me there, along with my family. I do have three boys, and I am married and all that, so it takes a lot of time, but I do plan on contributing more to those projects. There is a cool OpenStack ML2 project that I just did a small sprint before I went on this vacation, and we could talk more about that later, but Open Daylight, so OVSDB, you guys know Matt Oswalt. Matt is a good buddy of mine as well. We kind of geek out about OVSDB a lot, and I want to get involved more with other projects as well, but just joining Plexi 2 months ago, my concentration has kind of shifted there for now, and it'll shift back eventually, but I got to get used to vendor life first.
Was there a tie into the open source stuff and all of that, this emerging technology related to software-defined networking and so on, that kind of motivated you to want to kind of go to a vendor?
Yeah, I think a part of it is understanding the technology and where the industry is headed. I kind of wanted to be on the forefront and help shape what the next generation of technology is going to look like, as cliche as that sounds. But I really did like the product that Plexi has. Controller-based networking isn't impossible. There are certain differences to your typical distributed network or distributed control plane network, but centralized control plane is possible. I do like the Plexi product specifically, and then Open Daylight stuff back around to that was Brent and I have had very long conversations along with other people on other projects about the future of controller-based networks, and so when the opportunity arose to interview at Plexi, I jumped on.
Mm, got it.
That's a confusing technology, as we, you know, on the show we talk about controllers all the time, and there's many different types, many different controller architectures, many different ways of going forward, isn't there?
There is. We actually do a hybrid control. So we do have something called C3, which is a centralized controller, but we also have something that runs locally on the switches called C2, and that's kind of the distributed version of our controller. So if there is severed connectivity to the controller, the switch can still operate.
Yeah.
So we do have our own kind of centralized distributed model that we run for our controller.
Yeah, everybody's got a different model of a way of handling it. They all work the same. Conceptually, they all work, you know, the same. But
They all work the same.
Yeah, they all get the same result. They all deliver services out of connectivity, but that's the different ways of working. Mm. Was there something about Plexi like that particularly attracted? Because you're more into the startup, so you know, if you look at say where Paul and Lauren are going, they're going to a big vendor. You know, lots of comfort. You're not going to do anything. You know, it's not a big rash decision. Big vendor, lots of easy decisions to make. But you've gone to a startup, which is a bit more of a nervous decision, if you like.
Sure. Yeah. No. It took quite a while for my wife and I to discuss the implications of moving to a startup. Should anything happen where we're no longer funded or we go under? I think the thing that got me though was during the interview process. It was said to me that here at Plexi we assume nothing about what an Ethernet switch should do, and to me that's kind of like, okay, we have existing technology, but it may not be the best way to do something. So we're assuming nothing about the current infrastructures and architectures that we have today, and we're going to design a solution to actually address a larger problem than just the corner cases that could be addressed with typical products that we have today. That was what kind of tipped the scale for me, was that single phrase, and then just imagining the possibilities of being able to take a raw piece of hardware and do essentially whatever we would want with it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know it does.
No, I mean, Ed, to me it sounds like you're just you're forward thinking. I mean, in other words, where your head wants to be is, you said a couple of things there. One is just the way Plexi is doing its technology was really appealing to you because it's very open-minded and there's a lot of flexibility as to where the product could ultimately go. Plus you want to have your hands in where networking is going. And so to find a place that does that is a driver, is a motivator, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. That was a big part. And, it's really cool to walk into a meeting at the company. Again, I've only been there 2 months, but I've already been dragged into some pretty serious conversations. And there is also the part, when I talk about new technologies, I understand that it's very hard to find what is traditionally called a greenfield deployment today. So everything is going to be an existing yeah. deployment, right? So I make it one of my drums that I've already started beating around the office that we need to provide migration paths. Even if we have this new technology, even if we have this new greater way of doing something, we still need to be able to walk people to that. We can't just expect them to rip everything out. So that's something that I try to, that's a little drum that I've started beating ever since I started there.
Yeah, it's an important one to beat. I've been hearing that coming from some other vendors as well, where they're starting to realize, okay, we have to present how we're going to integrate this new solution into their existing environment. Because you're exactly right. You know, the greenfield deployment is almost a myth. You just don't see it all that often, the chance to build a data center from the ground up. And so therefore, when you're taking something like software-defined networking and adding it to a network that's already there, how are we going to interconnect these things? And providing that path in a clear way that users understand is kind of a big deal. Well, Paul, we should probably shift over to you and go through the same introduction. Would love to have that background of what you were doing, and then get into how and why did you make the transition over to Cisco.
Okay. Prior to working actually for my last job, I actually worked for a small systems integrator as well. So into a lot of different customer accounts, doing lots of different things. I always had that feeling that, you know, the networks that I was working on was never mine. So I never really got to the point that I could tweak them the way that I'd like to tweak them and, you know, really get to know them the way that I wanted to know those networks and get all the management tools and stuff in place. Toward the end of that run with the systems integrator, I started doing a lot more work with one of the local banks, and eventually just went to work full time for them. So the transition from the integrator to the bank was it was a mild transition because it happened over time, really. And done quite a bit of work there. Done some work in security. You know, I've worked and got my CCIA security and touched a lot of the different security products and platforms as I worked there at the bank. We also built out a data center and done some stuff like that. So got some pretty good experience there, but I got to the point that it seemed like probably the fun projects were going to start winding down. And if I wanted to grow, I was going to grow in the direction of management. So it was a great place to work, great people. I'm glad I had the opportunity to work there. I think it was a good opportunity, but I still wanted to grow some more. So about the same time that I'm having these thoughts, somebody that I've known with Cisco for years and years sort of reached out to me and asked me, would I be interested in looking at an SE position working in the Kentucky and West Virginia and Tennessee area. And the odd thing is, so similar to what Ed said, I think my name surfaced because of Brent. So Brent's got a lot of connections. Brent's been good to all of us, I think. But anyway, you know, we started having some conversations, and it seemed like it would be a good fit for me. It would give me the opportunity to do some of the things that I missed from, you know, as I went to work full time for one organization. I sort of missed a little bit going out and visiting those customers and, you know, getting plugged into some of those accounts and seeing what other people were doing. So that excited me a little bit, and I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper. You know, there's some other things that Cisco does well. Here in Kentucky, I live in a really rural part of Kentucky, so I was commuting 2.5 hours a day or so. So now I can do a lot of work, you know, out of my home office. And, you know, my home office is sort of my starting point for all my customer visits and stuff, and they work to position my customers – as they made sense for me geographically. So there's a lot of things that are really good about it. You know, when I think back, you know, when I first started working for the systems integrator, I had an SE. It was a commercial SE, not a public sector SE, that came in and sort of helped me get started on networking. And, you know, it was a good relationship, and he helped me in a lot of ways get started. So I think that's a really good position to be in, that we can get into these accounts and build these relationships and find out what people are doing and find out how we can help them achieve their goals. And I'm just really excited to get started with that process.
So you were tired of reseller life as well? Like, did the reseller life weigh you down?
It did to some degree. I mean, when I was working for a reseller, I was the person that the buck always stopped with. So, you know, if there were any problems with any of the customer accounts or with any of my coworkers' customer accounts, if there were issues, I wound up being brought into those. It wasn't like that I was completely worn down. It was like
there was nowhere to go.
There was nowhere to go. I mean, it was a small systems integrator. It wasn't one of the larger ones. So, you know, you're sort of in this perpetual generalist role, you know, continually learning a little bit about everything and, you know, struggling with, like Lauren said, you know, to go deeper or broader. And at that point in time, it made sense to transition over, you know, to the small enterprise space. And I did so with the bank. But at some point, you know, the projects ran out there. And this is a, you know, working in networking, working in technology is, you know, it's a continual learning thing. We've got to keep learning. And, you know, moving to Cisco was a great opportunity for that.
Yeah. You get access to so much more resources and, you know, this, you can get answers to questions and access to training materials far easier than you can as in the community.
You've got access to so many people with so much knowledge, a lot of mailing lists and a lot of things internally that we have access to. A lot of things, you know, when I worked for a small systems integrator, it was hard to get access to all the different, you know, Cisco products and code and different things that you wanted to experiment with and to learn. With Cisco, the problem is actually finding the time, because, I mean, they do keep you busy. You've got plenty of customer issues to work through. You know, part of my role is one of my customers has an issue, and for some reason it's not being handled properly or expeditiously enough through TAC. We'll get involved in that, and we'll try to figure out what's going on. You know, both try to build out this scenario ourselves or push that along through the proper channels with TAC to make sure it stays moving. So we have a lot of
resources.
You can
make so much more of a difference from the inside than you can from the outside.
Yeah, exactly.
So from a startup, to put it starkly, we don't have that. And that was actually told to me when I first took the job, that we don't have this training material or these 2 weeks or 4 weeks of training that we can set aside for you. So I think there's a little bit of a difference there from startup to a larger company perspective. But I just wanted to throw that out there in case anybody is on the edge of should I join a startup or anything like that. There is a bit of a short runway, I think is what I told you, Ethan, in a direct message on Twitter once.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a short runway to be able to take off, and there's not a lot of content there. But the great part about that is as you trudge through the trenches and learn the tech, you can make notes, and being fresh eyes on the product, which I have also noticed is a big thing, being fresh eyes on the product, you can also provide a lot of feedback where that can be flip back into the system and more documentation can be created, or you could even create the documentation. But there is a little bit of a short runway in the startup world, and there's not as much of a robust resource at your disposal like that.
Sure, Ed, we have a great training program. When are you going to write it?
Exactly.
to jump in there, I mean, I've kind of got both, because ACI is so new, it's almost like a startup. And so we don't have all of that training, and I am working to help develop it. There's also a difference between whether you're actually at the company or remote. When I'm there for a week, I get to sit in cubes and listen to people whiteboard, you know, all day long and learn from that. When I'm home, you know, I don't necessarily get all of that either. So it's kind of interesting. The three of us have very different experiences with that.
I've been dragged into some really cool whiteboarding conversations. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there are times where I'll get dragged into a whiteboarding session and my head hurts in 10 minutes. If I wanted to go and say, take the Plexi product and integrate it in X way, there isn't as much available to be able to go and understand how to do that. It's a lot of you sitting down and kind of doing it raw, doing a lot of the raw math and whatnot to be able to figure it all out.
There's a couple of different things, other things that I find very different about Cisco versus other places I've worked. I mean, the position I'm working at Cisco, I'm a user. I'm not an administrator. So as far as Cisco's concerned, you know, if I've got a problem, I've got to go through the proper channels to get that resolved. Everywhere I've worked at before, you know, if something don't work, it's up to me to fix it. I don't have access to fix it with Cisco. So it's a very different experience, and it makes you appreciate what users have to go through to get problems solved once you experience that. It's very interesting to go from a company with 600 or 700 employees to a company with 75,000 employees. I mean, when you go to these large meetings and you see, you know, huge numbers of coworkers, you know, around, it's like, wow, this is more people than I had at my last company, you know. So, you know, with my other company, everybody, if they didn't know my name, they at least recognized my face. So I could walk in pretty much anywhere, and they knew who I was and what I was there, what department I represented. But going to Cisco, you know, it's like you sort of got these little, groups of people inside this huge company, and it's an interesting experience.
Cisco's been described to Greg and I as not a battleship but 1,000 rowboats, because there's so many different little groups in there that are kind of almost like their own little companies. Has that been your experience?
I would say probably to some degree. I mean, it's almost like you're given a job to do and you're sort of left there to do that job, and you've got all the resources there, but you may have to dig through it almost like you were doing your own thing. So, I mean, you've got access to all the internal Cisco stuff. It's just, you know, it's so much stuff. Finding what you're looking for is such a challenge. But, yeah, it's, you know, everybody's sort of going in the same direction, but there's a lot of people in this company compared to, you know, other places I've worked.
Say you wanted to engage Lauren because you walked into an opportunity that looked like ACI might be a good fit. Could you just reach out to Lauren directly and say, hey, I want to bring you in on this? Or is there a process you got to go through to get her attention?
We generally have people like inside of our group that are sort of experts, or at least they're knowledgeable on certain areas. Like we may have somebody that's knowledgeable on ACI and on our SLED team, or we may have somebody that's knowledgeable on SourceFire on our SLED team. And we would go through that process first. But it's not like it's a hard to find process that I've found so far, but I'm probably a little bit new to actually answer that question and get it completely right. And so
I can jump in a little bit there. I think it depends on the BU that you're working with. So if someone wanted to reach out to me, then they could. And that is part of my job, is to integrate and talk to SEs, but integrate with other BUs and make sure that we're all talking and things like that. But again, you know, it's almost like a startup where you reach out to whomever you can, and hopefully they can connect you with the right people. As far as other BUs that are more established, there might be certain people that you reach out to and more of a process and things like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you ever needed to get me, you'd probably just IM me or tweet me or something like that.
Yeah, so the interesting, you know, we all have Jabber, and, you know, we've got a huge company directory, and pretty much you can get in touch with, you know, if I'm having trouble with a particular, you know, person that's working with a TAC case or something, you know, we can reach out to that person directly. There's not really a process that prevents you from doing that. When it actually came to engaging that in person and bringing them into a customer account or something, there might be something a little bit more. You know, one of the things that I also found interesting was, you know, when you were talking to Ed, a larger, you know, company like Cisco and the comfort of that larger company versus a small startup, and, you know, what happens if the company goes broke or what have you. And I completely understand. I would be very concerned, you know, coming on board a startup company. You know, what if a year down the road something happens? You know, I sort of had some of those same thoughts as I come aboard Cisco. I left a very stable position. And, you know, Cisco, it seems like every summer they announce a few layoffs. And, you know, there's enough churn within Cisco that, you know, it keeps you on your toes and keeps you a little bit concerned there as well. So while you look at Cisco as being a large large, stable company. You know, I've known people that's came to work for Cisco and worked, you know, fairly short periods of time, and, you know, either through fault of their own or no fault of their own, I don't know the details of all those situations, have found themselves unemployed. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think that goes for products as well. You know, like ACI is new. Obviously, it's going to take over the world. But, you know, if I were working for another BU, that wasn't the case. You know, there's reason to be nervous. Or even older products.
Well, you really had the robes on there. Wow, that was good. Well done.
I'm waiting for Greg to jump in.
We've talked about that plenty of times, though, right?
So when I took the position, I sort of decided, hey, this is something I think I'd really like to do, and I think it would be a good experience for me. It'd be a great learning opportunity. So if I do nothing more than come on board and, you know, work a year or two and, you know, learn SourceFire inside and out, you know, it's a great opportunity to do that. And, you know, I'll take the skills that I picked up there and use them somewhere else if that's, you know, if that's the road that I have to go down. But, you know, I'm not going to really live in fear of not being able to find employment, because I've been able to do so when I've needed to.
Well, the way I see it is, you're never going to work for the company you work for in 10 years' time. Chances are really, right, really slim that you'll be working for the same company in 5 to 10 years' time. You would have probably moved in. Either the company will go away or change or split into pieces or decide that you're no longer part of its value proposition, mm-hmm, or you'll change. You know, and some of what, you know, what Lauren and Paul sort of said was that they changed. They didn't want to be doing those jobs in resellers. They were looking for newer things to do, and that's why you started to look for alternatives to that. And, you know, for me, it's always been, there's only so much time I can spend at a single site before I get, for lack of a better word, bored, you know, because you do a job for a while and then all of a sudden you've found you've done all the interesting stuff and there's only the not interesting stuff to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if we're not comfortable with change, we're in the wrong business. I mean, yeah, you know, people that's not comfortable with change, they're, you know, trying to find a Nortel phone system to administer. You know, I mean, we've got, you know, this the industry's changing so fast that it's you can't even keep up with it. So, I mean, we've got to be comfortable with that and comfortable with the fact that, you know, maybe we'll or maybe we won't be working, you know, for the same company 10 years from now. But let's take our experience from the past and move forward and continue to move forward with it.
Yeah. So that's probably a good spot for us to talk a little bit about NetRounds, Ethan. We got a sec to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. We should do that.
Okay, so NetRounds is our sponsor. They wanted us to tell you that they quickly solve your needs to measure network and service quality from an end-use perspective. What they're trying to achieve for you is that they make sure your network meets quality standards and helps you easily find and fault-find and fix difficult problems. Now, the way it works is that you get a probe. You can get hardware probes or you can get virtual probes. You put them into your network and it'll collect data about your network and it'll upload them to a location in the cloud. And so it's a SaaS, software as a service-based solution for end-user experience monitoring with built-in tools for quick troubleshooting using the traffic generation that you've done, right?
So, traffic gen, and then we've got some, it sounds like transactional monitoring too.
Yeah, very much so. So if you go onto the GUI, it's really easy to use. It's very pretty. I don't know if you've looked at it, right? But most of us sort of get, you know, you do a packet capture, you throw it up, you get it into Wireshark, you try and decode it. It's not very useful. And if you've used CloudShark, which we've talked about in the past, it's still, you know, you've got a packet decode, but what you actually want is information, not noise, which is what you normally get. So unlike using homemade CLI scripts or expensive hardware tools, NetRounds is very easy to use and is offered on a monthly script subscription basis. So why not sign up for your own free entry edition, which is available by going to netrounds.com, and get 2 downloadable traffic generators and a whole suite of tools for all of your fancy protocols, DNS, HTTP, VoIP, IPv6, the whole lot, when you create your account there. And if you do, make sure that you say that the packet pushers sent them to you. And we thank NetRounds for sponsoring us.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, NetRounds.
I have a question for everybody. When I took the job at Plexi, I worried about my independent status in the community, and I had a lot of conversations with people with respect to that. Would I lose credibility? Would I not have as much of an opinion? So did you guys have the same thing when you joined Cisco? Because I did have quite a few conversations with a smattering of people about if I would lose credibility. And I think this plays into being able to acquire employment outside of the current situation that we're in as well. Like, would I still have that much exposure to the community? Would it still be valid exposure? Are people going to think I'm selling my soul to one particular product? So did you guys have that same feeling?
I definitely had the concern. Ethan introduced us. We joined the dark side, right? But, you know,
right.
I think we have to be honest with ourselves and honest with our customers and just continue to do the right things. My job at Cisco is to, when it boils down to everything, is to make sure that customer's happy. So they bought the right product. So we're making sure that we're not selling them a product that doesn't fit their needs, because or that the product's not sufficient, or this the one thing that the product doesn't do properly is the one thing that the customer wants to do with the product.
Yeah, there's an advocacy role there where you have to do something on Cisco's behalf, but in the best interest of your customer.
Exactly. We've got to make sure that, you know, we work with both the sales team and we work with the customer to marry the two together in a way that makes sure that the customer's happy. My job, the most important thing that they're tracking about my role is, are my customers happy with Cisco? It's going to look really bad on me if I don't make that happen. So does it look like I'm married to Cisco? Yeah, I'm not pushing another vendor's product, but I'm still trying to do the right thing by the customer. And that's what I'm, as long as I can do the right thing by the customer, I'm going to feel like I'm doing the right thing. Now, people looking in at that, obviously I look like I'm married to Cisco because I'm not, you know, selling some competitor's product. I think there's validity to that concern, but I've not had a whole lot of people come in and say negative things about that or anything like that. Everybody's been fairly supportive of my decision to do that.
For me, it was...
yeah, I want to hear this, Lauren. This will be great.
It's always a concern, right? But anyone that's ever met me knows that I'm pretty incapable of just being shady or not saying what I think about things. And it's, you know, obviously people that don't know me aren't aware of that, but that is kind of the reputation that precedes me. And now the guy I work for also has that reputation as well, I would say. It's a valid concern, I think, but I don't know. I think as long as you present yourself in such a way that people just wouldn't think that about you, then... you're kind of okay.
So, Lauren, let me ask you a real practical question here. You know, let's say on your blog you were to write a comparison of VMware NSX and Cisco ACI. Do you think you could write that in such a way that it would be taken seriously as a valuable piece of content that you would, as a person evaluating the two solutions, want to consume?
Writing it, I think that would be hard. Am I capable of writing that? Yes, I think so. But
of course you're capable, but it's an issue of perceptions, right? How could you deliver it?
I think people would, you know, verbally, I think people would take it seriously, but you're right, someone reading that, and I can't help that, you know, there's nothing I can really do to make that better, I guess, you know, because it's a perception, but I think I could have a good conversation, and I have had good conversations with people on that particular subject, and, you know, we've come to agreements on certain things, on what we think is good and what we think is bad about both products.
Anthony Burke writes about VMware NSX, and you're going to go ahead and write about Cisco ACI.
Right.
That's the agreement. I can put the question to all you guys kind of another way, and the question would be this. If Greg or I got a job in the industry working for a vendor, what would that do to packet pushers, which has been, even though we have lots of sponsorships and there's no secret about that, we try to be an independent show. What would the perception be if one of the hosts was working for a vendor?
I don't think you could. I mean, for me, I've thought about doing a new podcast, and I've thought about maintaining that neutrality. And I mean, there are people that do it, Speaking in Tech and various other podcasts where their vendors working for them, but they're not concentrating on the particular product that they, you know, take ownership of and things like that. So it works. If I were to do an SDN podcast, then that would be difficult. And my thought about that, and this may come to fruition, is okay, well, then I'm just going to embrace it and do ACI, you know?
Yeah.
It's complicated too, because you'll know more about the product that you work with every day. And you'll see that because you know it, you get confident about it. And that's the one that you favor because that's the thing that you do best. It's like a tennis player. You know, they all say they play golf, but a professional tennis player is not normally a professional golf player. And they can tell you all about tennis and how great tennis is, but, you know, and still be okay at golf and talk about it, but they're not honest because the thing that they're expert at is. So if you're employed by, you know, Cisco, you know, security to talk about their latest SourceFire firewalls, you're going to see those firewalls as better than you know, Palo Alto firewalls, perhaps, because that's what you know best. You're going to have, there's an inherent bias in the system about, and that same, that exact same point, by the way, applies to, you know, myself, because there's things that I've done in the field, and once I've done them, I feel like I know more about them. So mm-hmm. the more time I spend in the lab or doing things with customer, the more I feel I'm on solid ground when I make a an opinion or make a statement about something.
And that's nodding my head a lot. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the worst to me is that I can't go talk to the NSX owners and get honest feedback. And they probably feel like they can't talk to me because they think I'm searching for some kink in the armor or hole or whatever, rather than actually just trying to learn about it, you know? So that kind of stinks about it, honestly.
Well, the Cisco ACI marketing has been very aggressive. And so there's been a certain amount of, you know, strong discussion between the two. And I think you've gotten to the point where nobody talks to each other anymore. And that's regrettable. Sure. I think in many ways that, you know, that was a choice that somebody made to push it that way. But my point is, you know, it's what you, sometimes what looks like bias is actually not, it's just, it's what you know, or it's what you've experienced, or it's your current opinion at a point in time. But when you're being paid by somebody and that's your bread and butter and they can cut off your healthcare, you know, just, you know, especially if you work in California, they can sit there and say to you on Friday morning, don't come back on Monday. And you're like, no healthcare, no sort of thing. That can be a really sobering sort of insight. And you might not want to express a negative opinion about, you know, the people, you know, bite the hand that feeds you. And so bias comes in many forms. It's subtle. It can be indirect. It can be, I mean, and it's just simple things like Intel IDF conference I was at last week. Up until now, I've been, you know, a supporter of software-based appliances. And I went to this Intel conference. And as a result of being there and talking to people and sitting through sessions, I have a much clearer idea of how far that's going to go. It's going to be a long way, but all of the problems of it, right? So it's not just going to happen without a lot of pain. To be able to do NFV in software is going to require special hard, you know, silicon and new software code and DPDK and all this sort of stuff. Now, I wasn't aware of that until I learned that. So bias comes out in many different ways, and it's a very difficult one.
Well, what's nice for me is I'm still encouraged to, you know, write about other VMware products and things like that. I'm still encouraged to embrace things like that. So, you know, while I can't go off and say, you know, things like NSX is the best SDN out there, I can still go out and talk about vSphere and vCloud Air, and VMware is just an example, but any other products. Yeah.
And logically, you want to do that in the sense that the customers that are going to be ACI consumers are probably already VMware consumers.
Exactly.
And integration of those two things is something that customers need to understand. How do these systems play together?
Yeah, VCAC. I mean, I would love to just get my hands on that and really, you know, go at it.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, I haven't ever written about it, but I wasn't going to.
I did, and it's a big learning curve, and it's full of bugs, which is why it's now called vRealize Air or something.
Is trying only if you realize if you're using it in the cloud, though, Greg.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just trying to hide the stink. If you give it a different name, maybe it'll stink differently. So I wanted to ask you guys a couple of questions. The unique thing about, I think, the three of you as guests is that you are all bloggers. And you were all in a public sphere before you became what you are now. Did that help you in some way, or are you just, I mean, ultimately we only know you because you were public and involved in different events that we were part of, but did that help you? What do you think? Do you want to start, Lauren?
Yeah, sure. It absolutely helped. You know, it also doesn't hurt to be one of the first women that pops to mind when you're thinking of women in IT. You know, sometimes that's a hindrance and sometimes it's a helpful thing. So it's easier to remember me, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you ever have any hindrance, come and talk to us. We'll make sure.
I will. And you guys,
you know we've been really strong on that, right?
I do, and you guys have already helped me so much in, you know, a lot of my career, which has been awesome. But yeah, the being public, and not just writing the blogs and being able to kind of prove that you, you know, have the chops, but it also lets you network and meet people. I mean, all three of us said how we got our jobs were basically through knowing people, which, whether that's good or bad, I mean, we still have the chops, we can still prove it, you can read the stuff we've written, you can listen to us talk, but all in all, we knew people.
The thing is that you still got the jobs because you knew somebody, but you knew somebody because you'd met them through social media, because of blogging, because of, you know, the different things that we'd had. What about you, Ed? Do you think so?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, Mike Bouchong, I had been talking to him on the side. He had met me at one of the network field days. We had some exchanges on Twitter. And I was actually told during the interview process that they'd actually read my blog. They liked some of the stuff that I had done in terms of research and doing try to deep dive and asking why a lot. Not that my blog has a whole lot of content, but they liked what they saw. And my general presence in the community, I had been told it played a role. It definitely did.
And Paul, you've been very, very big on the Cisco Learning Network. In fact, your blog's almost secondary to the Cisco Learning Network.
I spent a ton of time on the Cisco Learning Network, and I started sort of on the Cisco Learning Network, and I wanted something that was sort of my own, so I sort of built the blog out. I would say that I don't know specifically, like throughout the interview process, if anybody went out and Googled my name. I have to believe that at some point somebody probably, you know, Googled Paul Stewart, you know, CCIE or Paul Stewart Cisco or something. There's a ton of material that comes up if you do that. But one of the ways it definitely helped me was, you know, through blogging at PacketU and the Network Field Day events. I got acquainted with Brent Salisbury, and I would have to say that if it hadn't have been for Brent, I probably wouldn't have known that the job was even posted, because I was really fairly happy in the role that I was doing before. I did see that at some point in time in the future, I would probably want to start looking for something, because the, you know, some of the projects that I enjoyed were, you know, coming to an end. But Brent sort of, you know, reached out on my behalf and reached out to me and, you know, asked me if I'd be interested in something like that. And then we started having some conversations. So I wasn't really looking for a job. So I think that helped in that way. And like I say, after the process started, I'm sure that, you know, somebody at some point in time probably, you know, jumped out there, looked at my blog or Googled my name or something, and probably found some material that was, you know, things that I'd done in the past, you know, things I've done to try to help others in the industry out, both on the Cisco Learning Network and my own blog. So I think that would give you a little bit of an edge on any other candidate's equal, you know, experience.
As it should. I mean, you're proving that you can communicate. You're proving that you have no problem getting up in front of a group of people and explaining different technologies. It definitely helps.
Yeah, being able to talk to people, give presentations, you know, that never hurt.
Did any of you ever had any bad experiences while blogging? So a lot of people say, I'm sort of worried about writing something down and having something negative happen to you, and that's why I won't write. I'm frightened to put myself out in public.
You know, I've went back and read my blogs, you know, some of my own articles, you know, after a year or so to go back and, you know, find some information that I was, you know, something I was doing at the time. And I'll read through it and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's full of grammatical errors or something. If I see a grammatical error, I'll try to fix it. But, you know, I've come to the realization my articles aren't going to be perfect, but if they're actually helping people, I'll take that risk.
Yeah, if you notice them after publishing, you can always go back and fix them. I mean, at some point, you just got to press the publish button and get it out there. And if you spend your time editing it to death, sometimes it just sits there in the drafts folder. Doesn't quite ever seem to make it out into the public.
Yeah, that's exactly. One of the problems that I have is I have so many blog posts in queue. And I've even talked to the guys at Plexi because they want me to start writing for the Plexi blog as well. And I struggle with being able to, one, articulate the conversations that we have. So inherently having a conversation with somebody, 90% of what you're saying is not coming out of your mouth, right, when you're having a face-to-face conversation with somebody. So to be able to articulate your thoughts into words, into a blog post is challenging sometimes. And on top of that, you're always worried about the feedback that you're going to get, where I'm trying to train myself that, you know, the negative feedback is good feedback, and you really shouldn't rule that out, and you should really actually absorb the feedback and make sure that you apply it and try to be the best contributor to the community that you can be.
Yeah. It's
very difficult, too, to proofread your own articles. I mean, because you wrote it wrong, you're going to read it wrong. You'll have the same word in a sentence two times, or just something completely wrong. But as you proofread your own stuff, it's really difficult to do.
So I have a trick for that, you know, which is wherever I'm editing it originally, whether it's Scrivener and the WordPress folder itself or the WordPress editing window itself, I'll get it all in there, edit it up good, and then hit preview, and then seeing a different view of it, just a different look and a different layout as it's there, brings out a ton of little errors, like exactly what you were saying, a word that's missing that you should have put in, or double words or misspellings or just odd things show up to me a lot when I look at that second view. Mm-hmm. There you go, for what it's worth.
That's a good point. For me, I usually write more how-tos and things like that, historically anyway. So that even helps me kind of keep my independent status. And, you know, I'm not writing about what's the best technology out there. I'm just writing about how to use the technology I'm using. I'm not really evangelizing. I'm just teaching people how to do it. And hopefully it's helpful. Usually, I've really only gotten like one negative feedback thing once, and it's from a guy who got fired, and I took his job later. So I don't know how seriously I took it. And it was just because I didn't like include specific versions of something. So that was about the only negative feedback I've ever gotten. And I think in 3 or 4 years of blogging, I'll take it.
Yeah.
So one more question that I think would be interesting to ask is this. A lot of times when we work in particular jobs, we kind of understand our value. If, you know, we're billing time, we understand what that value is because we're billing time. It's very obvious how to account for the hours we spend during a week and what we've done. And in other roles where maybe you're not billing time, you understand because of your relationship with your coworkers and your contribution to projects exactly why you're getting paid a salary. You understand that. How's that work inside of a vendor? Paul, you got some thoughts around that?
Like I said earlier, I started working for Cisco a few weeks ago, so I'm still trying to learn everything and learn how I'm bringing value to the company. Understand the importance of my role is to make sure that we build strong relationships with the customers, that they're, you know, that they're satisfied with what they buy from Cisco. And you know, it is a little bit of a struggle because, you know, what value does that have to Cisco over time? You know, when I worked with a reseller, you know, I knew I was billing out at X dollars an hour. If I was, you know, billing out 150 hours a month, I knew what the value of that was to the company. When I went to work for Enterprise, you know, I was basically saving them from having to pay that, hourly rate to a reseller.
Exactly.
So I could sort of gauge my value to the company. Here with Cisco in this role that I've taken, it's a much bigger picture that's going to be determined over a much bigger period of time. And I think it is a little bit of a challenge to answer that question.
Let me ask you one small question very quickly to wrap this up. I want to go around the table and ask how many people think resellers are in trouble going forward? Because I've been saying for a while that I think resellers are struggling. But what's your experiences? Lauren, you said earlier that you felt that a lot of resellers were having troubles and some of them are going broke or struggling.
Yeah, I think that's just the way the cycle is right now. And maybe it'll come back someday. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But I think right now we're in that part of the cycle where big vendors, and this was already happening while I was at a reseller, you know, they're choosing their gold elite status partners and working hard with them. And, you know, that's going to be a problem for smaller resellers that just can't, you know, sell the same quantity, that aren't a CDW or something like that, you know, or even like an ahead or, you know, a huge partner reseller.
It's not even volume. It's just skills. How do they maintain skills?
Yeah. No,
I mean, working for a reseller is a really difficult job and not something that too many people want to do, sustain for year in, year out. But if you're talking about SDN coming in, you're now expecting your networking people to completely retrain into, you know, a whole bunch of stuff while they're still making money.
And who does it even belong to? You know, and if you only have one or two of each.
If you're only a networking company, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you don't speak virtualization and the only thing your company is a networking integrator, you're never going to be you're going to struggle to be relevant in any form of SDN, whether it's Cisco ACI or NSX or Plexi or Big Switch. You're just not going to have this, you know, where are you going to find time to learn those skills when the resellers are always on a knife edge of going broke anyway?
Well, and I think it's going to be difficult too because, you know, the way to combat that then has become more of a consultancy and offer those services, kind of day two services. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have someone who can learn how to code or script, you know, someone who's learned Python or a VCAC or UCS director.
In an industry where people are used to just going and doing a CCNP and they're fit for purpose.
Right.
And now you're asking them to actually have computing skills. It's going to be fun. What about you, Paul?
I think resellers still have a place. I think they've got to focus on something, though, whether that's a vertical or a product or what. You know, it depends on the particular reseller and the particular markets that they're in. I know dealing with customers, when we have a really good, strong reseller that's really knowledgeable, they're usually a pleasure to deal with, the customer and the reseller. But I think it is really difficult because, I mean, you know, when I was working for a reseller, knowing what my salary was versus what I billed out. And then how do you spend enough time not billing out that you can actually learn new skills that aren't as relevant yet? I think it's a challenge. So I think they're really going to have to focus on a specific area and, you know, get deep in that.
But if you focus, your revenue gets much more dependent on just a narrow thing, and your business is seriously at risk.
Yeah, that's true, but we're not geographically bound anymore. So if you can focus on something, even if it's not something that we're going to sell a ton of in central Kentucky area, I mean, that reseller can, you know, reach out using all the, you know, technologies and stuff we have to work, you know, pretty much anywhere in the world now. So, yeah, I agree with you, but I still think there's opportunity there.
So I disagree. I think you have to be local. You don't have to be local, but I think customers want local people so that they have a throat to choke in person.
Some definitely do.
Yeah. Not everyone, but I think that's a major concern.
Certainly for consulting services, I think that's true. You want an engineer on site who you can talk to and see in person before you're going to commit to getting a job done. Just basic reselling, especially if it's hardware, no one cares in that sense. But when it's that person who's going to be...
Yeah. But the reselling's where the money is. So today, tin shifting is still what generates the revenue, not professional services. So even though you're billing... You know, Cisco and, you know, all of the big vendors invoice at $3,000 a day for their consultants, right? But most employees are making $300 to $400 a day, say. So there's an awful big gap in there. What about you, Ed? Have you got any thoughts to add?
It's definitely a reskill thing. The way that infrastructure as a whole, and it's not even networks. If you actually look at even what ACI is doing and what we're doing at Plexi and what other people are doing, we're kind of building this app-centric, not to go after the ACI name, but it really is an app-centric. It really is an app-centric idea to tying all of these different systems together, and it takes a different way to think about things. It's no longer entering a bunch of commands into a CLI and understanding what that one box is going to do. You really need to understand the solution as a whole. And it's a reskill thing. I don't think resellers are going to go by the wayside overnight. There's definitely, I'm going to go back to that migration path thing. I think over the last year or so, the whole quote-unquote idea of SDN has kind of solidified, so we kind of understand where it is and what it is that we want to do maybe within our infrastructures today. But we still need to get there. We still need to migrate off of the old technology, which is going to require kind of a hybrid skill set of the old and the new, and it's definitely a reskill. So not going to happen overnight, but there will definitely be some tumultuous times in the future for resellers. And like I said, I think it boils back down to the skill set. People are just going to have to reskill, and this isn't the first time it's happened in the industry either. I mean, Greg, I've heard you on other podcasts speak about all the different things you've done in your career. You've obviously reskilled over and over, so it's not something new, right?
Yeah, but it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to take the time to learn something new. Some people just, you know, you've heard me say this too. A lot of people just want to go home and sit on the sofa with a big bag of Doritos and watch The Simpsons, right?
Yeah. There are people who come
and
to work.
A lot of those people who are left behind at resellers are those people, right? There's not usually in a reseller, there's only two or three, if you're lucky, people who are.
Yeah, they're rock stars.
Who are the rock stars. And they're usually the firefighters, and they're the ones. Plenty of times I've seen resellers go under when two or three of those guys go. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, Lauren, but they usually are guys, which is why it came off my tongue.
no offense. I'll do the unilateral or whatever, guys.
I've seen whole entire resellers go under because their professional services division just froze up because they couldn't recruit replacements of suitable. And it's not just about skill, right? It's not just about technology skill. Everybody knows the guy who knows everything, but all he does is abuse customers and tell them, you know, you've got to be a communicator and able to work with customers and put up with salespeople and managers and CIOs and share, that sort of stuff. It's not an easy game to be in.
It's hard skills and soft skills. Like you said, it's knowing the tech, but it's also being able to talk to people. I've dealt with plenty of people that you want to just keep in a room and then you'll translate for them.
Well, as I've always said, I think you too, Ethan, we've always said, go and do a job as a reseller, but only do it for 2 or 3 years. And as soon as you get burned out, make sure you gap out of there and move to something else.
Well, it seems like a good place to wrap up the show. So why don't we go around the table? And since all you guys are active socially, why don't you go ahead and plug your blogs, plug your Twitter handles, books that you're writing or have written, if you like. And let's start with Ed.
Sure. My Twitter handle is at networknerd, nerd with a three, and my blog is still networknerd, nerd with a three, .wordpress.com. I will eventually buy my own domain. Feel free to reach out to me. Probably the most active on Twitter. So reach out if you have any questions.
Awesome.
Let's whip her a hat around so you can buy a domain name. It's $10.
That's right. How about you, Lauren?
Sure, yeah. Lauren Malhoit. My Twitter handle is at Malhoit, M-A-L-H-O-I-T. Certainly active there. I run the AdaptingIT.com website. There are some podcasts there, videos, and blog, or at least links to blogs that I've written for Tech Republic and virtualizationadmin.com. I also wrote a book, vCenter Operations Manager Essentials, which came out just a few months ago. So I think that's all the good plugs I can do. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, you're always a great guest. Thanks for coming on. And what about you, Paul?
So I'll be blogging, hopefully, as time permits, over at packetu.com. It's been really hard to find time to do a lot of writing here lately, but I'm trying to get back on that. And you can follow me on Twitter at packetu as well. So,
well, thanks a lot for taking the time and coming on.
I enjoyed it. I really did. So it's been great.
Mr. Farrell, what's the week hold for you, sir?
Just as we close out, thanks to NetRounds again for sponsoring us today. And my week ahead is neck down in a face full of keynote presenting, getting presentations done and finishing off some reports. So boring as always, but I've also announced that I'll be spending less time on Twitter. I don't know if you saw that today.
I did. I saw that today and actually responded in length to, because I've had some pretty similar thoughts. But yeah, you'll still be on Twitter, just not much.
No, I've been spending a lot of time there. It's been an enjoyable thing, but I'm kind of done with it. It's time to go back to blogging because I think Twitter ultimately might be years away, but I don't want to put my content on Twitter anymore. I want to put it back on my blog, so you'll see that. So don't. You can still follow me on Twitter as @EthereumMind. You'll also find me on Google Plus and LinkedIn. And basically, I just spam those locations with whatever's coming up on my blog. You can follow my blog on EthereumMind.com, and I look forward to catching you soon.
And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. EthanCBanks.com is my blog where I write about networking. And this, of course, has been the Packet Pushers podcast on Twitter. We are at Packet Pushers. That is the place to follow us for all the content that we are putting out there. We have, of course, this podcast and other channels that we publish shows to. We also have a community blog. So that is a blog where folks from all around the world who are network engineers write about their experiences and then share that. And we will tweet those things out via @PacketPushers. PacketPushers.net is a home base for us. If you would like to send us an email, packetpushers@gmail.com. Greg and I monitor that mailbox, and one of us will get back to you with an answer to your question and so on. Any thoughts that you have or comments you'd like to share would be great. If you would please leave us a comment on iTunes, we would really appreciate that. That helps us when we promote the show to sponsors and different things. Say, look at all the people that love us. See, that'd be really great if you could do that.
Yeah, find us. That's the most important thing: is getting new people listening to the show, expanding our evil reach, and biasing them everywhere.
That's right. So thanks to our guests. Thanks to all of you for listening. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.